welcome to installment 55 of Sefer Mitzvahs from the Rambam. Today's portion contains three mitzvahs. Prohibition 200, the prohibition against seeing leaven in your house on Pesach. Prohibition 201, not to own any chametz on Pesach. And positive commandment 158, to eat matzah on the first night of Pesach, the 15th of Nisan. In the Torah, we have various substances which are forbidden. However, there are different levels of how strictly they are forbidden. One level could be that one is forbidden from eating this particular food, particular substance. For example, the prohibition against eating pork or something of the sort. One is prohibited from eating it, but one is allowed to get benefit from it. There is another more severe level when one is not only forbidden from eating, but even from having benefit from the object. For example, a mixture of milk and meat. It is not only forbidden to eat it, but also forbidden to have any benefit from it whatsoever. Chametz, leavening, on the holiday of Pesach is unique in that not only one is not allowed to eat it, and not only is one forbidden from having benefit, but one is even forbidden from having it in one's possession on Pesach. And these are the first two of today's commandments, Bal Yiroi and Bal Yimotze, as they are commonly known. Literally not to see, and also not to have found in one's possession chametz. Since these two mitzvahs are so closely related, and in the Rambam's discussion there is some overlap, we will discuss also both of them together. In Prohibition 201, which is the prohibition bal yimotze, not to have chametz found in one's possession, the Rambam explains what exactly is the difference and why these count as two commandments. We have two separate verses, one stating that chametz may not be seen, which is the verse from the book of Exodus, chapter 13, verse 7. Another verse, chapter 12, verse 19, states, Lo yimotze, it shall not be found. In the beginning of the tractate Pesachim, the Gemara explains on which acts, or on which sorts of possession, one would be transgressing the prohibition not to see, and on which ones one would transgress the prohibition not to have found. And it tells us there why we need both separate verses in order to teach us all the details about when someone would be transgressing the prohibition of owning chametz on Pesach. And so too the Gemara says that one that does own chametz on Pesach is transgressing two prohibitions, Bal Yiroi and Bal Yimotze. One example of how we could see the difference between these two cases is when one has chametz and one owns the chametz. However, it has been deposited in someone else's possession, let us say a non-Jew's possession, as safekeeping for a loan, collateral for a loan or something of the sort. So the chametz still belongs to the Jew who owns it. However, it is not totally in his possession. It is certainly not in his property. It is in the property of the one who is now temporarily in possession of it. In such a case, even though he doesn't see it, he would be transgressing the prohibition of owning the chametz on Pesach, bal yimotze, it shall not be found in your possession. And this is still within his ownership, and therefore he has responsibility for it. On the other hand, he is not seeing it. And as the Kesef Mishnah explains, he would not be transgressing the prohibition bal yiroi of seeing the chametz, since it is not literally within his territory. Therefore, he would not get in such a case both prohibitions. Another detail the Gemara points out is that from the first verse, Bal Yiroi, it mentions that it shall not be seen b'chol gvulecha, anywhere within your boundaries, which is not mentioned in the second verse, relating to Lo Yimotze, that it shall not be found in your house. What is the difference? Let us say someone has a field that is not literally in his house, but out in the field he is storing chametz. We learn from the first verse, the one relating to Prohibition 200, that one shall not see the chametz, that it shall not be seen wherever you own it, within any of your boundaries, even out in the field. Whereas in the second verse, prohibiting the Bal Yimotze, it shall not be found in your possession, there the verse says only in your house or in your homes, and therefore both verses are necessary. In the Prohibition 200, the first mitzvah of today's portion, that one shall not see, or there shall not be seen chametz within one's boundaries, the verse mentions two separate categories. One is chametz, and one is se'er. What is the difference? Se'er is a leavening, we could call it a sort of yeast base, which is used in order to create the leavening process and instigate this process within other forms of chametz. Therefore, the se'er would be the one which starts the process, and the chametz would be the result. Both are mentioned separately. The Rambam says, however, that they do not count as two separate commandments. Even though it says, lo yiroi lecha chametz, there shall not be seen chametz, and also lo yiroi lecha se'er, there shall not be this leavening product seen within your boundaries. Nevertheless, since they are both speaking of the same concept, it only counts as one commandment. The Rambam is not justifying why it is not two separate commandments, even this prohibition not to see, and therefore you would have a total of three. But since the prohibition of seeing chametz and the prohibition of seeing the leavening product, both are in the same idea, therefore they count as one commandment. And as the Rambam explicitly quotes the Talmud, which states, "Hainu chametz, hainu se'er," that both of these are considered to be exactly the same, and therefore it is considered to be one commandment that the chametz or the chametz product shall not be seen within your possession. The Rambam then explains the punishment which is incurred as a result of transgressing this prohibition, and we learn a principle which applies to many of the biblical prohibitions. As we have discussed on other occasions, biblical prohibitions are in general punishable by lashing, malchus. However, we have a principle that it has to be something which involves a positive act. If one ends up violating this prohibition by not doing something, one cannot incur lashes. Only when he does something can one get lashed. An example is this case. If a person had bought chametz before Pesach, let's say a loaf of bread, and he did not remove it from his possession when Pesach comes in, he will end up violating these two prohibitions of not seeing the chametz and not having it found within his boundaries. However, he did no positive act. When he bought the chametz, it was allowed to own chametz. It was even allowed to eat chametz. Therefore, he did not do a prohibited act. Why is he now violating the prohibition? Because he did not take measures to ensure that it should not be in his possession. This is called an act which does not involve a positive action, and therefore he cannot be lashed. Let us say, however, that in the middle of Pesach, he went to the store and bought chametz. In such a case, he would get lashed for owning chametz on Pesach. Since he did a positive action, this would incur the penalty of lashes. And the Rambam quotes a Tosefta, which gives two examples of this, that a person who leaves chametz within his possession from before Pesach until during Pesach does not get lashed. And so too, a person who has a field which developed into kilayim, that has a forbidden mixture of different forms of growth, as we shall discuss in our later on in Sefer HaMitzvahs, such a person does not get lashed, since his prohibited act did not involve a positive activity, that automatically in this case the mixture grew, and automatically he ended up owning chametz on Pesach. But when he did the act, it was an allowed act. The details of what constitutes an act to warrant lashes and which will not be considered sufficient to incur that punishment are discussed in the Tractate Shavuos. The way we keep from violating these prohibitions is, first of all, by removing chametz from our possession on Pesach and before Pesach. As we discussed in the positive commandments, that we have a positive requirement, Tashbisu, we must remove all chametz from our possession on the 14th of Nisan on Erev Pesach. And as we discussed then, this is accomplished in two ways. One, by literally burning the chametz and destroying it, and another way, by bittul, by making a statement renouncing our possession of the chametz, therefore releasing and separating our connection with the chametz. There is an additional procedure which has become common in later generations. This is through selling the chametz. By making a legal contract and a binding legal contract, one is allowed to sell one's chametz to a non-Jew. And even though it might be in one's house, since you are selling the chametz to the non-Jew, and the non-Jew is allowed to own it on Pesach, this is an allowed act, as long as assurances are taken to ensure that the chametz will not be eaten mistakenly by the Jew on Pesach. Of course, since it was a binding transaction, after Pesach, it now belongs to the non-Jew. However, one is allowed to buy it back. And this is what is commonly done, to sell chametz and then buy it back after Pesach. And in doing so, one avoids the prohibition of owning chametz on Pesach, and so too, one will allow the chametz will be allowed to be eaten after Pesach. That the law is that our sages enacted a penalty for someone who owned chametz on Pesach, that even after Pesach it may not be consumed. And even if there is a chance, and even more than a chance, that there could be a Jew who, God forbid, at this point is not keeping the laws of Pesach fully, and perhaps would even be using the chametz on Pesach, it is nevertheless a positive thing to sell his, to ensure that he sells his chametz. And even though, as the quote from the Talmud goes, just because someone has eaten garlic and now his breath smells, does that mean he should eat more garlic? So too, if someone does something wrong by using chametz on Pesach, does that mean he should also violate these prohibitions as well? Certainly his chametz should be sold for him so that he should not own it. Just briefly to explain one point from a Hasidic philosophy about why one is forbidden even from owning chametz on Pesach, is that the prohibition of chametz is so severe it goes to the very essence of the thing itself, whereas other prohibitions are only expressed when one eats it, but one is allowed to use it. That's because the form of this particular object has not been prohibited, only when one eats it. Whereas when we get to chametz, not only it is prohibited when one eats it, but even in any form, and down to the very essence, the mere ownership of it is itself a sin. And the positive commandment 158 is the commandment to eat matzah on the 15th of Nisan, meaning the first night of Pesach. And the Rambam tells us this is regardless about whether we have the Paschal sacrifice or not. The Rambam is referring to an earlier discussion in Sefer HaMitzvos regarding the consumption of the Pesach sacrifice, that although the verse says, Al matzah umreirim yechlu, then one shall eat the matzah and the mar together with the Pesach sacrifice, nevertheless, it is not only when one eats the Korban Pesach that there is a commandment to eat matzah. And our sages have expressed this by saying that the Torah, kol v'chayva, that the Torah made it a requirement to eat matzah in and of itself. In other words, it is an independent mitzvah. And this applies on the first night of Pesach, even now that we do not have the Korban Pesach. This commandment to eat matzah is a very clear indication of how we need the oral tradition in order to interpret what is written in the five books of Moses. We have two verses, one in Exodus and one in Leviticus, which state that one shall eat matzah for 7 days. In the book of Deuteronomy, it says you shall eat matzah for 6 days. And then again in the book of Exodus, it says you shall eat matzah for 1 day. It's too complex in a tape of this sort to go into the details of the Talmudic discussion, but let it suffice to say that all of these verses are necessary to teach us various things, and the conclusion in the Talmudic tractate Psachim is that the first night it is a requirement to eat matzah, whereas the other nights it is only reshus one is allowed. What matzah should one eat? If it is at all possible, one should ensure to have matzah shmura, with flour which has been guarded from the time that it is cut in the field, to ensure that water has not come in contact and that it is turned into chametz. Egg matzah or something of the sort not only cannot be used to fulfill this commandment, but is in general forbidden to be eaten on Pesach except for a person that is ill or a person that is aged and unable to eat something else. Regular matzah, not shmura matzah, is allowed to be eaten on Pesach, as opposed to this egg matzah, which cannot be eaten not only for the Seder knot, but also throughout Pesach should not be eaten because of various halachic considerations. One should endeavor to get the round, handmade shmura matzah in order to fulfill the commandment at the Seder, the first two nights of Pesach. As it is said in Kabbalah, that it is mechud de'emnusa, that it is bread, which, meaning the matzah, is food which gives you faith, which increases your faith. And so too, it is mechud de'asasa, food which heals you, which makes you physically well also. As the Mittler Rebbe explained, that through the increase in faith on the first night of Pesach, we will strengthen our connection with God, and automatically this increased spiritual health, our spiritual connection with God, will bring about an increase in physical health, kipshuta, in its simple sense, with actual physical health as well. It is also explained in Chassidus that although the commandment of eating matzah is on the first night of Pesach and the rest of the nights are only reshus, one is allowed to do so, there is a certain advantage of reshus over chayva, and in a way there is a superiority of eating matzah on the other days of Pesach in the spiritual sense, although not in the sense of actually fulfilling the mitzvah. And even on the last days of Pesach, and in a certain sense, even more so on the last days of Pesach, one can internalize this increased faith by the consumption of the Shmura Matzah. And especially on the last day of Pesach, Achron Shel Pesach, the eighth day, in which the Haftorah refers to the Messianic age, this will hopefully increase our faith, and this increase in faith itself will bring about the coming of Mashiach. As we say in our daily prayers, that we ask that God should bring the Mashiach, Hatzemach David Avdecha Meheres Atzmiach, that he should quickly spring forth. Why? Ki lishuoscho kivinu kol hayem. As stated in many Jewish writings, that because we hope for you all the day, as a result of our faith in God, and the faith that he will redeem us through Mashiach, that this itself, the faith itself, will actually help bring Mashiach. That why will Mashiach come? Ki lishuoscho kivinu kol hayem, because we are constantly hoping for your redemption, and awaiting the days of Mashiach, and may our hopes and wishes be speedily fulfilled, then we can fulfill all of these commandments in the proper way as defined in the Torah, not only eating the matzah without the Korban Pesach, without the Paschal sacrifice, but to have it together with the Paschal sacrifice in the Beis HaMikdash, the temple in Jerusalem. Thank you for tuning into the daily portion of Sefer HaMitzvahs. For more information or to sponsor a share, contact Sichas in English at 718-778-5436. And please join us again tomorrow.